Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of IWPN Radio. Today, I'm with my partner and co-host, Bob Lipinski, and we're going to have a special guest today, Michael Davis, who is one of the original people founding the Wine Guild of Charlottesville, which we'll learn about today. Gentlemen, why don't you say hello to the audience?
Good morning. This is Bob Lipinski. I'm hoping you're going to enjoy this fabulous show with Michael, and we have a lot to learn about Charlottesville and the wineries of Virginia. So please stay tuned.
Well, thanks for having me on, Dan. Yeah, I appreciate you having me.
Well, to bring the audience up to speed, my name is Mark Norman, and part of what I do is international wine marketing. But we're seeing a real shift in the world and the world of wine, and that's one of the reasons we invited Michael today. But I am co-founder of the International Wine Professionals Network, and we're seeing a great opportunity among professionals and wine people, and I like to be in the middle of it. Bob, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Certainly. I'm Bob Lipinski. I'm basically a writer. I've written 10 books. I do quite a bit of seminars across the country on wine, food, beer, and spirits. And I like traveling, visiting wineries, and seeking out great new finds, and especially food.
That's a tough life. That's a tough life. Michael, yes, somebody has to do it, including people like Michael. Michael, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm the head wino for the Wine Guild of Charlottesville, and have been involved in that group for about 8 years, I'd say. I wasn't one of the founders. I came in about a year after. I've been on the board that entire time, and then in the last couple of years, I sort of took over as the kind of managing director, and I sort of guide where it's heading now. But,
I thank you, and I think that's one of the reasons why I felt it would be a great match to bring you on, Michael, is when I talk to people, and I don't mean just in Central Virginia, I'm talking about people around the country, the concept behind the Wine Guild of Charlottesville is somewhat unique. Occasionally you run into somebody, oh yeah, we have something like that, but I think the organization and the variety of themes that you and Evan put together are fantastic. And we're seeing, and let me tell the audience, I am a member of the Wine Guild, and we're seeing a wonderful growth in the number of people that attend the events. And I think the very positive reaction that people have when they get there and they see what they can do. Michael, can you explain to our audience what the Wine Guild is and how it started, how it works?
Sure. The Guild is, at its core, it's a buyer's co-op wine club. Members can buy wine at a discount. They can buy wines that we recommend, so it's also a recommendation service. Our wine director is Evan Williams, and Evan tastes thousands of wines a year, and we have other writers as well, but Evan does the bulk of it. He tastes thousands of wines a year, and then a couple of times a week, he will send out a recommendation on one or two that he finds remarkable for a variety of reasons, whether it's just, you know, the best rosé of the season that he's had, or it is a particular value that this is just drinking way above its price point. And so you can get on our email list and get those recommendations and purchase those wines at a discount. But you can also order directly through us. So if there's a wine you know you like, you've seen something in a restaurant that you enjoyed, shared it with a friend, or it's just one of your favorites that you you buy a case of each year because you want to keep your vertical going or something like that, you can just order that directly through us and pay 20% less than you would through a traditional retailer. We can do that because the Guild is not a traditional retailer. We do not have inventory. We do not have a large staff that's waiting around just in case you want to pop in and buy a bottle of wine. So we're able to have a dramatically reduced overhead. Most of everything is transacted over email or a telephone call. We get paid by you prior to ordering the wine, so we don't have any financial risk on that end, which allows us to, as a co-op, pass all of those savings on to the members. In addition to being a wine recommendation service and a buyer's co-op, we also do events, as you've alluded to. We do tasting events usually every other Wednesday night, and they're usually themed around a particular region. So we'll do like a night in Tuscany or a night in Spain or a night in Argentina, and we will feature wines from those regions. And then we'll also have a pop-up restaurant that features usually three or four entrees that pair well with those wines. And the food is optional, but you know, you can come and you can taste through the wines at your own pace, and then sit down and have dinner if you'd like. So that's kind of the overview.
So I'm just going to add to that, Michael. You know, being a member and being the wines that Michael referred to that we get emails on are outstanding, and there is a whole range. Literally, if you think of a wine region in the world, in a year and a half, I've pretty much seen most of them. And as far as that pop-up restaurant goes, the food, the cheeses, all the little things that go along with it are outstanding. Bob, I know you have a question. Why don't you jump in?
Yeah, Michael. Do you feature – I know you're mentioning featuring wines, but have you had the occasion or do you feature any perhaps winemakers with their wines at these events?
Yes, we do. I would say about 20% of the tastings, there will be a winemaker that will be passing through the area, either from Europe or somewhere, a domestic region, and we will host them. We've had Vira from northern Italy, the Piedmont, showing off their Barolos. So Francesco Vira was in town and did that. We've had some people from who are recent ones.
You had the people from the Santa Barbara region, the Pinos. There was a couple of winemakers
there. Yeah, we had three of them. They were on a cross country tour. Three Oregon Pinot makers, and all three were in the room. And that was fun to get to meet them. It's always great to talk to the winemakers. And actually, we have a lot of local winemakers that are members of the Guild. And so if you're ever interested in one of the wines you're tasting, interested in the thoughts of a winemaker, and it's one of my favorite things, is I'll sit there with the winemakers, and we will have vastly different reactions to a wine, and they will be talking about it in the way it's made and picking it apart from a technical standpoint, and I'll say, yes, but isn't it delicious? And they'll kind of pause and go, yeah, you know, you are correct. They're picking it apart from a completely different standpoint. So we really love to taste together because you do see it from a different point of view.
Fantastic. I'm, as I mentioned earlier, I'm being a member of the Wine Guild. I know, you know, what the more popular events are like, and how vibrant they're becoming and growing. But you know, for the audience, Michael, can you describe how large they get and what you think are attracting so many people to come to them?
Yeah, sure. The events tend to attract, I'd say, an average of 100 people. They can go higher and go 125, 150, and sometimes some of the slower events have drawn 75 people. But I'd say about 100 people are average. I think the, you know, I would be curious to get your impression. I mean, I'm the host, and so I don't know what draws somebody like yourself to come to the event. So, Mark, what is it that draws you to those events?
Well, I would tell the audience that I have a very diverse palate. I am always interested in trying new wine. But as an example, if you go into a wine shop and you see a bottle of wine that's $15, $20, $30, $60, you might, on the less expensive wines, be willing to take a chance based upon a label description or something. But as you get into the more expensive wines, you know, am I going to like it? You know, what is this really accurate? I see that it's got an outstanding rating, but, you know, is it really worth it? And what I love, and my wife and I generally attend together, but what we love is the ability to try the wines. And again, as Michael referred earlier, there's a theme to the wine. So often you're tasting the same blend or the same varietal, but a step up as you go along. And it's wonderful to be able to say, hey, you know, I really like number four, or we love number five, and we want to we think that wine is worth the price. And sure, we're willing to pay it. And by the way, if we buy it through the wine guild, we're paying, you know, a good 20% less than what if we found the same wine in a wine shop someplace. But finding the really good quality, small handcrafted wines are not easy, certainly not in the majority of places that sell wine in Virginia, because a lot of those are supermarkets. But even the small wine shops are so limited because of their space. There's so little that they can offer, and it's a rare opportunity for you to taste it. So we love that. And I think talking to the members, whether they're new, whether they're as visitors, or whether they're longtime members, I think that's one of the things that all of us love is, hey, let's try it. You know, I don't like two, but I love three, or, you know, whatever the situation comes out, it's that ability to try the wine and know, all right, I can buy three bottles of this or buy a case of this because I know what it tastes like and I'm willing to, you know, spend the money for it. So hopefully that conveys to the audience, you know, and again, I'm sure, you know, I you know, Michael, you keep the numbers on it, but over the last year and a half, I have seen a definite growth in the number of people who are attending the event, and I think that's because as people discover this, discover the opportunity, I think more and more are being attracted to this. Now, I'm going to be quiet for a moment and say, Bob, could you ask the next question?
Well, I'd like to expand a little bit on what you said, because I think that some of the things that the events are wide open to the public. So that's another thing that I think has been the word has been getting out over the last year and a half, that these are not members only events. In fact, half the people at the event, sometimes more than half the people at the events, are non-members. So that's been helpful to get the word out. In fact, you don't have to be a member to be on our email list and to get our wine recommendations. The only thing that membership gets you is the discount. So if you buy, you know, enough wine to make the discount make sense for you, then it makes sense to become a member. Other than that, membership is $200 a year, by the way. So if you spend $800 a year on wine, saving 20% will break even. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense for you to be a member. The thing that was the focus of the events for me was to bring food into the equation. I really found it frustrating to go to most wine tasting experiences and you stand at a counter and they have six wines and they are wines that they think will sell. So they're sort of geared towards the masses rather than anything that's particularly unique. And you stand there and you taste one after another, just bang, bang, bang. And I always have food with my wine. I rarely have a meal without a glass of wine, and I rarely have a glass of wine without something to eat. And so as somebody who has a hard time, you know, judging the full experience of a glass without the companion of food, I really wanted people to be able to taste through the wines and then say, you know what, I really thought that number two and number four were very interesting. Let's grab a bottle of each. Then they don't have to pay the restaurant markup. They can just purchase a bottle and sit down at a table with a plate of food that is appropriately paired to that those wines, and spend an evening with some friends, or you know, with their partner, or with somebody they've just met there, and experience the way we usually all experience wine, which is at the table with good friends and good conversation. And after the end of that evening, they'll know whether or not those bottles of wine went where they expected them to go or didn't. And they can make a more informed decision whether or not they want any more of it, or they just wanted to come out and have a nice evening. So that I think is one of the main things that I wanted to do differently. I didn't want to do formal wine dinners at this space. We do those, but we do those at area restaurants. I wanted it to be pretty casual, where you could come in and you could, you know, pair whatever wine with whatever dish, and you can kind of pick whatever entree you would like. And I also wanted to create an opportunity for people to have impromptu dinner parties. So if, you know, for example, if Bob and I met and we had never spoken before, we meet at the tasting and I find out you've written 10 books and I wanted to dive deeper on that, and we start chatting about those books. And after about a half an hour, we've been really, really hitting it off. If we're both hungry and we had to leave and go out somewhere else to get something to eat, you know, with our respective spouses or partners, we would probably not say, hey, would you like to join us for dinner, or get in touch later to have dinner together. But if you can just say, hey, are you hungry? I was going to get some food. And you can just plop down on a table, order a cheese plate, grab an entree, and then spend the next hour or two having an impromptu dinner party. Those bonds become much, much greater. And I think it creates a richer community. And so those were some of the things that I was really interested in. And I also wanted to feature better and more interesting wines. Like last week, we did Chateau Moussard from Lebanon. And not only were we featuring wines from Lebanon, which not a lot of people have had, but we had some older vintages going back to 1999 that traditionally retail for, you know, $85 a bottle. And to be able to come in and taste a series of wines that include wines, you know, a couple of wines over $50 that have, you know, 10, 15 years of age on them, I think is one of the things that draws people to, you know, put their pants on, get in the car, and drive down to the Wine Guild.
Well, I was at that event. The 07, I thought, is fabulous and will continue to improve, but that 99 was so smooth. And to add to Michael's comments, what I will say is, you know, that was his design, his idea. I will say it's been achieved, because you see exactly what Michael described happening so often, and it's happened to my wife and I on a number of occasions. But it is a special thing, a special evening, and I think that's one of the things that I would love to convey to all across America, to all wine passionate people. There are alternatives. But anyway, Bob, now I'm going to ask you to ask the next question.
Oh, actually, excuse me. Michael, I know you mentioned or briefly mentioned a bit earlier in our conversation, but when did this whole Wine Guild actually come about, and how did it come about? I'm interested in that because I love the background of organizations. I mean, was it your brainchild, or how did this evolve, and when did it evolve?
No, actually, I can't take any credit for the founding of the Wine Guild. The Wineco was founded by our wine director, Evan Williams, was one of the co-founders. But it started with, a group of about half a dozen guys, including a local restaurateur, Will Ritchie, Chad Zacabe, who used to be the general manager at Jefferson Vineyards, and Chris Doran, who worked in a local wine shop. And I know I'm forgetting some people. But these were all people who, at some point, worked in the local wine industry, most of them in restaurants or in a local wine retailer. And then as they moved on to other jobs, specifically like Evan is an architect, and so he used to work in a wine shop and then went on to become an architect, and one of the other ones managed a restaurant and was a wine buyer there, and then he moved on to sell wine for a local distributor and could not buy wine from the other distributors. So what would happen is these people moved on from their jobs, and they had in the past had direct contact with distributor representatives, had tasted lots of wine, knew what they liked, and could order at cost or, you know, at employee discounts. And then when they went on to become architects and other people, other jobs, they were frustrated by the fact that they knew what they wanted and they were self-directed and they couldn't just reach out to the wine distributors that they knew had these relationships with and say, hey, can you send me, you know, six bottles of X and a case of Y? And so that frustration began to create the idea of starting the Wine Guild. And actually the Wine Guild original concept was to have it be a wine club where you would have private storage and an area lounge and that kind of thing. Unfortunately, the costs involved in that were prohibitive. And so the ideas kept bouncing around until it finally settled on, well, why don't these guys get a license, an ABC license, as a wine retailer, and start this co-op. And so they gathered enough friends together to make it work. And that's where it started. It started as a frustration of not being able to continue to have the kind of contacts and access to wine at a wholesale level that they have in the past. Yeah.
Mark, back to you.
You know, and again, we're skipping around a little bit, but something that, you know, Michael's talked about, has touched on the diversity of the different wines that we as members are able to taste are really truly unique. But one of the things in my role in the talking with consumers around the country in social media is the frustration that unless you live in a big city, it's often difficult to experience a wide range. Most of the wine shops, as Michael alluded to before, you know, have very limited tasting events, and often it's something that they're trying to push in terms of selling, not to create a broad brush theme for different people to try. And I always go back in my mind about 10, 12 years ago, I was living in Connecticut and a wine shop owner and I were having a conversation. It still infuriates me when I think about it, but somewhere along the way, he says, yeah, wine drinkers are pretty stupid overall. And I really feel that the growth in direct to consumer, it is consistently now passing $2 billion over a 52-week period, a year period. I see a great change in the overall palate of wine lovers. Now, this isn't everybody, but it is when I think of wine lovers, I think of many of the members of the Wine Guild. So, Michael, what I would like to do is ask you a question. Do you see, you know, during the 7-8 years that you've been involved doing what you're doing, have you started to detect or do you see a change in the overall palate of the local wine drinkers in Charlottesville?
You know, it's hard it's harder for me to speak to that because we're not a traditional retailer that is responding to people coming in. We don't carry a large inventory, and so we are not extra sensitive to what is moving off of shelves and what isn't. Like, oh my God, people are really, you know, these things are flying off the shelves. We got to keep more of that or broaden that category. We are the vast majority of our wine, 95% of the wine that we sell is through the recommendations that we make. And I think that colors or limits our view of the wineries. We're tasting through, you know, all of these different wines and then recommending things. And so we kind of drive what people are buying more than the other way around. So I think the traditional retailers would have a completely different idea of what the general public is reacting to. I know that I've seen more people buying rosé, obviously, because of the season, and obviously, not obviously, but I've noticed over the last couple of years that people have been buying more sparkling, but I think that is just because I am a huge fan of sparkling, always have it in my fridge, and tout to every ear that I can get in how much of a wonderful antidepressant it is, that it's impossible to be in a bad mood with a glass of bubbly in your hand and use it on a Tuesday night whenever it's necessary. Just pop the cork after a hard day and have a glass of sparkling. And I think a lot of people have heard my sermon on sparkling and bellied up to the bubbly.
Well, the one event that you know the Wine Guild had with the grower producer from Champagne was just really fabulous. And there's been a number of times you've had Cremants and other sparkling wines that have been wonderful. But maybe rephrase it. Some of the more obscure regions, are you seeing better at, you know, another way to look at the broadening of the American palate or the local palate is the attendance to some of the more obscure regions. Like I thought, I've had a dear friend who was Lebanese, who was a doctor. He has since passed away. But he always talked about the wines, and I've read about them. In New York City, I've had the opportunity to taste so many wines from so many different regions, but I never had Lebanese wine. So I was really looking forward to it just so that I had this opportunity. But I was impressed by the attendance at, you know, Lebanese wine. How many people know about it? Well, quite a few. So do you see better attendance to the, if you will, more obscure regions?
Unfortunately, no. I mean, I think, like, the Chateau Mussard Lebanon tasting was a perfect example of one that you were surprised at the turnout. I was disappointed with the turnout. I thought we were going to have probably 30% more people than we had. But that's, you know, that's how that rolls. When we have an event around a region that is sexy, romantic, a great tourist region, if we do a night in Tuscany, line out the door. You do a night in Alsace, not so much. You know, we still have good crowds, but I can tell you we will have Champagne, Tuscany, Spain, things like that will bring out. We're doing our next event. I am a little nervous about, you know, we'll talk about that later. But I think that, yeah, it's a passion of mine. But obscure regions definitely draw fewer people. But doesn't mean we're going to stop having them. Because I think the wines are interesting and they draw enough.
Well, I'm glad you do. Bob, why don't you, you know, we're drawing toward the end. Why don't you get one more question in?
Yep. Michael, based upon what you're seeing, do you think the future of wine consumption, at least in Virginia, will change?
I think that specifically in Virginia, it's changing very quickly. The quality of wine, and I'll speak to Virginia wines, because that I think is the thing that we have to deal with here. Sounds like it's an ominous thing, but that's I've been really impressed with the quality of Virginia wines, the improvement over the last 10 years. I've time and time again, I am presented with wines that raise my eyebrows, and I think that the wines are the wine region as a whole. I think we're 250 wineries in the state, and in the Monticello area, 30 or 40, and it's just growing like gangbusters. And the level of knowledge that every year the wineries are collaborating to share information, and I think they're just doing a terrific job. And the more I've gotten to know the local wineries and the local winemakers and winery owners, the more impressed I am with their commitment, their passion, their skill, and how they manage what is an incredibly difficult region to grow grapes in and to make great wine. And they are just giving Mother Nature the middle finger year after year, and doing it with grace and style. So more power to them.
Thank you.
Well, and to kind of one of the things that I've noted, especially among the crowd, is we're also seeing more and more young people. Now, Charlottesville, for those who don't know in the audience, a major component to the local economy and demographics is the UVA, the University of Virginia campus. And we are seeing, I see in the audience a lot of younger people, and I often have the opportunity to chat with them as, you know, we're tasting wine, and there is a real desire on their part to try different wines, to try from different regions, and to learn about what they're doing, and not just simply sit there and throw down a glass of wine and say, okay, I liked it or I didn't, but to understand. And even when there isn't a winemaker, often the people who are pouring at the tasting events are either the distributor, the importer, or somebody who works for them. And frequently, they're fairly knowledgeable. One of the more interesting things that I found is recently there was a tasting event for Sicily. And this was some of the wines from fairly high up on the mountainside of Mount Etna. And one of the people who were pouring was a young lady, and she was describing to some of the members how she had been visiting. And one of the things that she loved about the region was, she said, you know, just, you know, get in your car or get on a bike and go for 40 miles down the road, and you're in it's like an entirely different region with a different theme and a different thought in terms of the cuisine and even the wine itself. So you get these perspectives, and I think some of the younger people, you know, the UVA students, graduate students who are coming to these events are picking up on this and really enjoying it. One last question before we wrap up the session. Michael, you alluded to an upcoming event. Can you tell the audience and hopefully some people who are right here in Central Virginia who could attend, can you tell them what the next event's going to be and a little bit more about where they can go to attend it?
Sure. Our next event will be the 1st of June, Wednesday the 1st, and it is Nebbiolo from Northern Italy. So we are working with Andrew Cole, who is the sommelier and co-owner of the Lampo, a local restaurant here. And Andrew was also one of the key people choosing the wines for the Sicily tasting that you mentioned. He and Tracy Love. And so Andrew has been excited about Nebbiolo and Northern Italy, obviously, being an Italian wine sommelier. Nebbiolo is one of my favorite varietals. I it might be my desert island varietal. If I could only drink one thing for the rest of my life, it might be Nebbiolo. And so, but like I said, I'm a little nervous because when you say Northern Italy, rather, you know, it's not Tuscany. It's not places that people tend to think of as sunny, warm wedding destinations and things like that. And Nebbiolo is not as well known as something like Cabernet or Cabernet Sauvignon or, you know, something like that. So I'm hoping people will come out and realize just how outstanding good Nebbiolo from Northern Italy can be. And they can get information at our website, which is WineGuildCville, CVILLE.com, or look us up on Facebook. We always post events at the Wine Guild's page on Facebook, or you can get on our mailing list by emailing info@WineGuildCville, and we will put you on our mailing list and keep you up to date.
That's fantastic. Michael, I appreciate very much. I think it's been a great session. Gentlemen, let's wrap this up. Bob, can you say goodbye and wish the audience well?
Yep. First of all, Michael, thank you so very much for being a guest on our radio show. And to our listening audience, thanks again for tuning in. And until next time, I'm Bob Lipinski. Thank you.
And Michael, I think you kind of told them how you can get in touch, but, you know, why don't you say your farewells to the audience?
Well, thanks so much for having me, both Bob and Mark. It's been a pleasure to talk to both of you, and I hope to see you soon at a Wine Guild event.
Well, you know you're going to see me, especially when you mention Nebbiolo. And when you were mentioning that, I know one of Bob's favorite places is the Piedmont. And, you know, he and I have often talked about Barolos and Barbarescos, and people need to know that that's comes from the Nebbiolo. So this should be a really outstanding and exciting event. I'd look forward to it. But to our audience, I hope you'll join us next time. Thank you for coming to this event, listening to us, and we will see you soon. Goodbye, everyone.